It's Friday, crackheads. That can only mean one thing. It is the crack. How are you all doing? We got a big old weekend of combat sports. Something for everyone in the mix, you know? We've got Israel Adesanya topping the UFC bill. We have Johnny Eblen on the PFL. We have RAF, which is becoming must-see. Colby Covington and Dylan Danis, two very polarizing human beings, will be grappling on that card. Armin Sarukian will also be looking to get another win over his rival, who he has already had a brawl with, who he has already made very famous. It's all very interesting. Lots of boxing as well. Moses Itoma, Fundora obviously fighting the US too. A lot going on, lads, but I'm not going to lie to you. It's been a rough old 24 hours for the Emerald Isle. Yeah, most of us, you know, we headed out yesterday to support the boys in green, and after going 2-0 ahead in Prague against the Czech Republic, we have been knocked out of the qualifying process for the World Cup. It has been a pretty devastating day here, not just because of this enormous hangover I have, but just the fact that we won't be in the World Cup, you know? And then I was thinking, you know, the next time we can qualify for the World Cup, I'm going to be an old man, you know? It's over. My life, it was here yesterday, and now it's gone. And I'm wondering, what can possibly bring me back? And then I remembered, oh yeah, combat sports are very fun. And guess what I do for a living? I watch combat sports. Lucky boy, Pete Carroll. But I'm not the only lucky boy. There's two other lucky boys on this show. And I can't wait to see them because I'm going to be relying on them a lot today. Welcome in Chuck Mendenhall and Ben, folks. Ben, how are you feeling today?
I felt better. Nothing compared with your heartbreak. I'm sorry to hear all that. If it helps you feel any better, I don't know if this is the World Cup you want to go to. You know, we're not doing great when it comes to just getting people places right now in North America. I don't know if you've been following along any of the news, but what's been happening in our airports, things of that nature. As of right now, I would have to say this country seems incapable of hosting a World Cup. So maybe you guys are better off staying at home for this one.
There's some silver liners for you, fella, huh? Yeah. Feeling a little better?
I did appreciate, though, how quickly Pete went to, it's over.
Just my life. Yeah.
1 foot in front of the other, Pete, man. You're looking at a big picture. Yes. Go back, look at your day-to-day, see if you can get through that. Pretty soon the pain will ease. You'll see.
You know, this is how it must, you know, like, I don't want to go into the Ariel vein of when the Bills lose, you know, like you can get.
That's like a week-long thing, right? Like a week-long, yeah.
Well, you ought to be used to it by now, jeez. Used to it.
He's not wrong, I mean.
Yeah, well, you know, look, we will bounce back. Ireland ever oppressed. This time on the football pitch or something. Anyway, we have things to talk about, boys. I could rant all day about this. It's a bit of an action-packed weekend, Chuck Mendenhall. I mean, my God, I see you dropping some PFL bars there on Unground with Brian Battle. Oh, you know, I see it. I see it. I like it. But we need to start off with Israel Adesanya against Joe Pfeiffer. And, you know, it's a great fight. I'm actually really excited for the fight. I like the style matchup. But it's kind of like, where do you see Israel right now? Like, what would a loss or win mean for Israel at this stage for you, Chuck?
You know, man, it's kind of crazy because it feels like when you realize it's been 3 years, right? Like since he beat Alex Pereira in that crazy knockout at UFC 287, I think it was. It's kind of hard to imagine that he hasn't won a fight since then because it felt like at that moment, just the way, like, remember he was firing the arrows into him, and it seemed like he'd kind of rediscovered his kind of mojo, and we were going to be talking about him again. And here we are, 3 years later, he has three losses, and the last one obviously being a TKO. It's not where I thought he would be. Like, he was only 33 years old at that time. He's 36 now. So it's kind of been a sharp turn, but then you kind of think about it, and you look at his career and all told, and I'd actually had to do math on this, but he has had 76 total pro fights. When you look at, like, kickboxing, you look at mixed martial arts, and you look at even the boxing career. And dude, that's a lot, man. So like 33, at 33 years old, like he was already, you know, it's one of those types of things you can't really quantify. Like some guys may be in their prime or just at the edge of their coming out of their prime. He'd had a lot of fights, man. So I guess in some way with enough time and like watching his performances, it's not entirely surprising that he's in this situation. But dude, he was so good during his initial run in the UFC that it felt like he'd have more of a lengthy like time when we're talking about him. And to see him kind of in a situation now where he's doing a fight night against Joe Pyfer, kind of back against the wall, it is novel, right? Like, it just feels very different from the usual Izzy like lead up to a fight.
Do you still see him as a contender, Ben, folks?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want?
Yeah, I want you to elaborate.
It's good enough.
I mean, okay. I'm gonna need you to do a lot today. I don't want to have to stress this. You know what I mean? You're gonna have to really take the ball and run with it, guys, as usual, but more so than usual, if possible. Thank you.
It's weird when you say contender. That evokes an image for me of could he fight for the belt and reasonably win it? And I would have to say against the field that is in that conversation right now, including the current champ Khamzat Chimaev, I'd have to say no. There's just no way. If you put Israel Adesanya in there against Khamzat right now, that's irresponsible, frankly. So, and yet at the same time, he does still feel like one of the more important people in the division just because of what he's done, the aura that he still brings with him, the lingering effects of the star power that you can see with him. I think that the problem is you see him at this age. We've seen this with a lot of fighters who have similar styles. When you relied so much on reflexes, speed, athleticism, things like that, the punches that used to miss you by a fraction of an inch are hitting you now. And the shots you used to be able to take with no problem are hurting you. And that, it's a tough thing to adjust to, I think. People get so used to being able to do that style, and then once it falls off a little bit, that style does not age well. Anderson Silva was a good example of that, where, you know, he was untouchable, and then all at once, everybody was touching him. And I think Israel Adesanya has a little bit of that problem. Some people can make an adjustment. Some people can go through that period and be like, okay, these are the things that aren't there for me. Let me lean into some of the things that are. We've seen guys where, as they've aged and they're, what they can do physically changes, they've gotten smarter along the way, and they can put that into work for them. They can just win fights with veteran savvy. I think, you know, you see guys like Alistair Overeem, who was doing that later in his career when he just wasn't the same physical force that he used to be. I think it's going to be tough for somebody like Israel Adesanya to do it, and I think it's especially tough when you have a difficult middleweight division. You know, you do have like a lot of guys coming up who are hungry young fighters who can really test you. I think this is an interesting matchup for Israel Adesanya, though, because I feel like Joe Pyfer's not a mystery. You can look at that guy and kind of tell what you're going to get from him. That's a matchup that you could potentially figure out for yourself if you're Israel Adesanya. And if you can't, then it's a bad sign. It's a really bad sign.
How bad of a sign? Like, I mean, considering how great Adesanya was at the height of his power, and I don't think a lot of people give him the credit he deserves for, you know, his title run, the fights he had, the technique that he displayed. But if you're a guy like him, Ben, and you're three losses on the bounce, you go in, you lose to Joe Pyfer. If that happens, would you be surprised if he hung them up?
No, I wouldn't. And you know, when he took time after that Nassourdine Imavov fight, which, you know, now it feels like 10 years ago that the UFC kind of fed him to Nassourdine Imavov, apparently for no reason, because we didn't turn around and do anything with Nassourdine Imavov. Partly it's his fault for not adopting a raven.
A raven, and I was going to say.
Carrying around on his shoulder. I mean, that's
been thinking a lot about that recently.
It's all I think about when I hear his name. It's all, I just think,
the raven.
Just straight down.
Yeah.
He did not do himself any favors by failing to adopt the raven gimmick. But we threw Israel Adesanya in there with him to get knocked out and show, like, all right, sort of a passing of the torch moment in the division, and then didn't do anything with Nassourdine Imavov after that. He took that time away to kind of reassess, think about where he's at, and to come back now and take this fight with Joe Pyfer. And if you recall, when this one was first announced, the prevailing sentiment was, hey, isn't that great that Israel Adesanya is willing to do a fight like this? You know? Because everybody kind of recognized he doesn't have
to. I know, that's true.
He's kind of doing the younger generation a favor by even showing up for them this way. And the subtext of that is because he might go and get knocked out ignominiously to a guy who is just sort of like a mid-level player right now in the division. And if you go and you can't win this fight here, I do think you either have to think about hanging it up or you have to think about a totally different phase of your career, the sort of fun fights phase of your career where you're going, give me some peers, give me some people where there's an interesting yeah. narrative and the fight is a little less dangerous. Like, stop feeding me to the young lions because it's done what it can do for you promotionally as the UFC. I think that that's sort of the crossroads you're at here. Even if he wins this, I think you just sort of buy yourself a little bit of time as a top middleweight. Because it's just hard for me to see him clawing his way back up at this point to fight for a title again.
Yeah, yeah, it's a weird, it's just weird in the sense like all of his fights have felt so big, you know, like in the opponents, you could go down there, B-roll, and be like, man, these guys are crazy or whatever. And this particular one, you're like, okay, this guy's coming up. He's got like a little shine, obviously, from the whole Contender Series thing, the B. Joe Pfeiffer thing that Petey adopted for a little while there.
Ooh, B. Joe
yeah,
Pfeiffer.
Yeah. And it's a little weird. But sometimes when the UFC kills these guys off, they do it gently, and sometimes they do it in a very devastating way. And I'm not sure what to make of this one in a weird, like, are they trying to get Joe Pfeiffer over? Like, because obviously, like, you take, you know, a bit of the Izzy mojo and this becomes part of your story. Or are they, you know, or is this a matchup where they're saying, all right, Izzy, this is your chance to get right, or at least they're couching it that way for him. It's one of those types of things, though, because this isn't something people had contemplated. Joe Pfeiffer was nowhere near on the radar, right, of this guy for years, and here we are. So it's a big opportunity for one guy. It's like this point of proof from the other side of it, from Izzy's side of it. And do you remember, like, we've seen different things, but, like, remember when BJ Penn was just skidding off the rails for a long time, and they yes. basically were like, all right, let's try to find BJ a winnable fight here. They're giving, or at least one that's not going to rattle his brain. So they're giving him like Ryan Hall, Dennis Seaver, and he couldn't clear those hurdles. And it was like that. It can be sad even when they, you know, even when they try to gently put you to pasture, that type of thing, or like to see where you're at, or to give you basically what they think might be an easier fight. Sometimes these things can be sad. That I think that might be in play coming to this one. If he loses to Joe Pfeiffer, I think that you look at this era and you're like, okay, that you can close the door on that now, right?
Before we move on, I'm just interested because you've both spoke about this fight in an interesting way, because I think we all agree it is intriguing to some extent, Pfeiffer and Adesanya, given Adesanya's technical savvy versus Pfeiffer's just bulldozing kind of power. Who are you guys picking? Like, I know we're not doing a pay-per-view picks thing for this. I'm just wondering, based on how you're speaking about it, which way is I going with this one? Ben, who are you picking?
I can't feel good about myself as a human being if I pick Joe Pfeiffer to beat Israel Adesanya. And yet, that is disappointingly easy for me to imagine. And yeah. I think it'll make me sad. And yeah. I don't want to be that kind of sad. I don't want to look ahead to that that kind of sadness. So officially, I'm picking Israel Adesanya because that's the world I want to live in.
Has he ever had this long of a layoff? I feel like he's so prolific, even when he was like, you know, the champion and stuff like that. Like, what is this? This is over a year, right? Like February of last year. Like, so 13 months. Giving him the benefit of the doubt on that, like just saying like, hey, he took some time off, or like he was able to kind of dig deep like he did in that second or that fight where he beat Pereira. He's able to go through this. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he shows up and wins this one. Just based on all of that, he is one of those guys, though, man, who, and he hasn't really done this in this, like in the lead up to this fight, where he was kind of mentally controlling it just in the way that he does, you know. But I do think that he's a special fighter in terms of kind of understanding what he's looking at. And with enough time to look at and kind of understand a guy, you like his chances, right? So I feel like if he's even 80% right, he should have a good chance to win this fight. So I'm gonna pick Izzy to get it done.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you guys. And honestly, I wouldn't be mad if he won the fight and decided to walk away then. Like, instead of waiting for these yeah. guys to get smashed out, you know, I'm being like, oh God, it's getting tough to watch this. You know, the old through the fingers situation.
Yeah. Well, it's like the Strickland fight, you know, which was a couple fights ago now, right? Like, when that one happens, you're like, oh boy, that was a sharp turn. Like, you just didn't see it coming, right? And sometimes when that happens, man, it's very difficult for them to get back on track. But just to Ben's point, man, it's hard to kind of like matchmake him against some of the best guys in the division right now and imagine him being, you know, the Izzy of old that's going to go through them. I feel like that's where the trouble is. So if you were to hang it up, man, I'd be like, that's the right way to go out.
Yeah. Do you think there's any way Macy Barber could leapfrog Silva in the Shevchenko title stakes, Ben, if she gets a win in the co-main event tomorrow night? Because she seems to be someone that has an exciting style for fans to some degree. Obviously, Grasso, a former champion, up against her, and she could be in a very promising place if she beats Macy as well. But just given that Macy hasn't been in those title stakes yet, I know Silva hasn't either, but do you think there's a good chance that she could become the next contender to Valentina's belt if she does win?
I think, honestly, it's wide open still, just because there seems to be so little of interest really happening in that division that anybody who could jump up, make a big impression, win a big fight in a big way, and really draw attention to themselves one way or another on the mic afterwards, just with like a great finish in the fight itself. I think if you make a case, now's the time, you know, because it's not like there's anything that seems like, okay, this is the obvious next move. I think after that, the most recent Valentina Shevchenko victory, everybody heaved a heavy sigh and was like, she could do this for 5 more years, couldn't she?
Pretty much.
And it might not be super fun to watch, but she could do it. And so I think like right now, we're just sort of desperate for any sort of fun, any action, any interesting new narrative and storyline to get excited about. It's anybody's ball game. Just jump up and make a case for yourself right now. And the UFC might very well be like, yes, sure, fine, you're next. Get in there.
I think Natalia Silva has got to be like wearing her full on Alexa Grasso gear this weekend, you know, saying like, let's get this done. Because obviously, if Grasso wins, there's no way in my mind that Grasso like leapfrogs everybody and we go back to the same fight that we've seen 3 times. But the UFC does seem to really like Macy Barber, right? Like, I mean, and you mean that in the sense like sometimes she ends up in high profile positioning on cards or on cards that are highly visible, like the ESPN flagship type cards or the ABC cards. Like she would end up on those because I think the UFC finds like they think her aesthetic is good, you know, like in terms of going in there. So I think that they like to showcase her. Those things in this new era seem to matter because, you know, just for whatever reason, you look at the matchmaking and like some of the decisions that are going into who fights who. A lot of times, like Ben said, it's like it's showcased, but it's also just like we kind of want to do this one. This one just feels like a bigger fight to us than the other one. And I do think Macy Barber has been coming up for so long. You know, we've talked about her. Who's talking about Natalia Silva? That's the problem, right? And honestly, it would be unfair for her, having already beat Alexa Grasso and then going in and beating Rose Namajunas, to suddenly be behind somebody who just beat Alexa Grasso, right? Like it would be like, you'd be like, how does that make sense? But we know how it works, man. With Macy Barber, people have actually talked about her, and she's going to be the recency bias will come in if she's able to go in there and look good in the fight. I could see the scenario for sure that she can do that, man.
Yeah. I mean, aces are fucking wild in this iteration of the UFC. Let's be honest. You know what I mean? It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter if you deserve it. You know?
This is your despair from that game again, isn't it? Like, this is just like, I don't give a fuck about any of this.
Nothing makes sense anymore. Chuck, it's Michael Chiesa's last fight. They've given him Nico Price, who is on quite a significant losing streak, I'd say. But when he does win, it tends to be quite violent. Chiesa, though, 38 years of age, he's hanging them up. I think he's had some brilliant wins in his career. Like, I know he's never quite been in that title mix, so to speak, but he has some very impressive names on his record. What would you remember from, like, about Michael Chiesa, the fighter? Because it seems like he has a bright future as a broadcaster beyond this.
Yeah. Well, he's fortunate that he's very good at that, right? Like, and I feel like that is kind of a natural place for him to end up. So you always feel good for guys like that. I think for me, man, it's still kind of like, it's sad, I guess, in one way, but like the tough 15, like him just kind of breaking through, beating Ally Quinn. Like, maybe it's just because it was one of those things that I actually paid attention to tough back in those days, like maybe toward the end of it. But like you go forward and I haven't really watched a lot of them, if any, actually. But he struck me as a guy who, you know, we got to know him on some level while he was, you know, coming up in those coming up on that show. And I think that kind of played the whole time. Like you mentioned, dude, he's he's just a tough guy. Like, he, you know, his submission skills and all that stuff, but just also beating some of the guys he did. Maybe he caught some of them on the tail end, like the Carlos Condits and, you know, Diego Sanchez, some of those types of names.
Ferguson,
but dude,
as well, right?
Yeah, Ferguson. Like, he's got a lot of, he's, I mean, but these are all guys who had really long sustained careers, and he went through a bunch of, Jim Miller, he's got to win against. Like,
yeah,
you know,
he submitted Jim Miller in 2015. That's,
yeah.
That's crazy. Significant.
Which is, yeah, when you look at Jim Miller's overall, like, how many guys have been able to do that? That becomes like a big eye opener too. But that's, I think that that's kind of Michael Chiesa. In a weird way, he was one of those guys that you didn't know 100% what you were going to get, because he could beat anybody. I felt like just about, like, every time he was in a matchup, I felt like, well, he could win this fight. Especially remember when he went to Seattle the first time against Jorge Masvidal, it felt like it was tailor made for him, and he didn't win that fight. So in a weird way, he was one of those guys, man, very durable to last as long as he did, very bright. Like, if you've ever talked to him, he's like one of those guys who treats you like he knows your position. Like, he understands the role of the writer, and he understands the role of the journalist, and he's been a pleasure to deal with. Just a tough, tough dude. And I mean, ultimately, that's how he's going to go down, as a guy who had a very long, like, what is it, 12, 13 year career, and broke through on tough, because that's where I first knew him.
And representing the Pacific Northwest out here.
Yeah.
The Pacific Northwest, we don't have a ton of top fighters.
You have the Spokane Vixen
anymore.
You have the Spokane Vixen.
Yeah.
The Spokane Vixen.
Yeah. But
you got Sean O'Malley. He's from,
well,
kind
he's
of,
from kind Helena, of, training out of out of Arizona and stuff.
I love
now,
that we're debating Ben on this.
I know.
Where he lives.
Dude,
we're,
you've
like,
got two,
Ben,
you've got a surplus of fighters from up there.
Michael Chiesa proudly reps the Pacific Northwest, yeah. Spokane. You weren't going to be able to have a UFC event in Seattle and not put him on there. I think it is a good time for him to hang up the gloves at this one, because he'll get to have a whole lot of local support there and everything. But you're right. Like, that's what I remember about him, is not only just being like a dangerous submission fighter, also one of those guys when you would see him show up and fight at lightweight, you'd just be like, how are you making the lightweight limit? Like, he's a big dude for that division.
Yeah.
And had like a fun fighting style. But yeah, just like a smart, thoughtful, interesting guy. He was always somebody, you know, I'm sure you have this too, Chuck, where you have like kind of your list in your head of what I am looking for, you know, not just like who would make for an interesting interview, but if I'm working on a story that's about like some kind of topic in the fight.
You need
game,
a perspective. Yeah,
exactly. Where I need somebody who's going to have a thoughtful, interesting perspective on this topic. He's one of the guys I knew I could reach out to, and he's going to give you something where he's actually going to have thought about it and have something interesting to say about it and have a perspective that maybe I hadn't considered before. And he was always on that list for me. And so, yeah, it is good. Like, especially when you see somebody, I remember, I think he said this once to my CME co-host, Chad Dundas, maybe for an article in The Athletic, where he was talking about kind of realizing at a certain point in his career the toll that this sport was going to take on you, where he was like sitting around after one of his fights and just sort of like running his fingers through his scalp and feeling the dents, like dents in his head from like the other dude's elbows, and kind of going like,
Jesus.
Oh yeah, this is not going to be good for you if you stick around too long in this world. And so I am glad to see him sort of making that decision now, while, because he does have the other options. He does have like a broadcasting future he can lean into.
Yeah. I thought for a second you'd say like he pulled off a full piece of scalp, and like he was like, I was like, oh my God.
Stop that, Michael. You know, geez, your scalp's falling off. I actually, you know, you mentioned that, Ben. Like, he actually struck me as a kind of guy, and this will sound very insulting to fighters, but I've spoke to fighters about this before. All right, like some guys are too intelligent to be really, really successful at fighting.
Oh, yeah. No, this is the thing. Chad and I have talked about this before.
Yeah. Yes.
Some certain people who we deem too reasonable to be a professional. Because
that's true.
It's a better, and I understand what you're saying. Like, it's we don't mean it as insulting as it sounds. Because, like, in order to be a really successful pro fighter, if you were kind of just going to craft somebody to be made for this, you would want them to have a certain lack of interiority.
Yeah.
You want them to not even think about it enough to get scared or to get worried. You want them to just go out there and just sort of be like, well, yeah, of course I'm going to win. I am the
The greatest fighter of all
right.
time.
I'm chosen by God to go out there and win these fights. Like, that's exactly what's going to happen. And we've seen those guys, and it's kind of a superpower to be able to go in there and just, like, to have never been cursed with any sort of self-awareness or pity or fear. And
so
that's kind of a gift until it's not. But yeah, like some of these guys where you're just like, maybe you being this level of aware and thoughtful and reasonable can kind of get in the way of your success.
I've seen lots of those.
But it also can help you figure out when it's time to stop.
Yeah. You ask somebody, like one of those types of guys, and they're like, well, he is a southpaw, and, you know, I don't handle southpaws well. Like, you know what I mean? They start talking like that. You're like, oh, okay, you're thinking of it way differently than these other fighters. I've seen a lot. Do you guys remember John?
Saucy was always kind of like that, I thought. But where,
he was one of the better ones, too.
Yeah, and he was. But you'd hear him talking sometimes before fights, and he would almost, like, talk himself out of thinking that he was going to, like, you would, like, I interviewed him once before a fight, and I think it was one that he ended up winning. But the kind of pessimistic tone that he had, he was just talking about, like, I found myself in the role of encouraging him. Like, I don't know, man, you're pretty good.
You could do this, Gegard. You could do anything you set your mind to, Gegard. You guys remember John Cholish?
Oh,
he was a dude up, like, he lived in like Westchester County, like, and he, or, like, in that area, and he was a Wall Street guy. And I remember. I went into his office. I was like, I got to talk to this guy. He's a Wall Street guy by day trade. And like, but he fights. And that's exactly the vibe. Like, he had a couple of wins at the time, but I was like, you just knew, you're talking to him. He's way too reasonable. Everything was so reasonable. You're like, and he knew that too. He's sort of like, well, you know, it's going to come off. It won't last long. I'm just going to do this for a while. Like, it was a lark almost that he was on. But I mean, yes, I've seen those type of guys. Peyton Talbot is one of those dudes a little bit. Where he's like, dude, I'm going to lose, and then my fans are going to hate me. He's like, he's just very reasonable. He sees it all. He understands kind of what's going to happen, and he ended up losing that fight against Barcelos last year, and he caught a glimpse of what he prophesied, basically.
Yeah. I'm just imagining, like, generally they do that keys to the fight, and the three things pop down. Like, to say, southpaw, 1-7 of 8 fights via KO. Last one, kind of stupid.
Not self-aware.
Yeah. Anyway, lots of good fights in this card. I should say the boys, of course, are in. The men in the muck, not the boys in the back anymore. They are over there, and they will be enjoying this one. Mansoor Abdul-Malik is on the card. Terence McKenney's on the card. Tofik Masoyev, the former Rizin champion, is on the card against Bahamundes. Chase Hooper's on the card. Very good fights. Navajo Sterling, very good undefeated prospects there. Adrian Yanez, who we once were talking about as the best boxer in the UFC. We're talking about you, New York, Rick. He's also on the card. So it is quite a banger, but it is just one of significant MMA offerings from the weekend, because we have PFL in Pittsburgh, and the local boy Dalton Ross is there. We'll talk about him in a minute. But it is Johnny Eblen's kind of bounce back fight since that spectacular loss. Is the only way to describe it, to Costello Venstinas, the current middleweight champion. We all remember seeing them getting tapped out in the last 10 seconds of their meeting in the Middle East. He is welcoming Brian Battle to the PFL for this fight. And Chuck Mendenhall had a word with Brian Battle, and a very good interview, Chuck. What is the sense you get from Brian Battle? A man who has a lot of bounce back ability, based on what I read on uncrowned.com.
Well, he does. He's one of those dudes who falls forward. And I was, you know, that was kind of the premise of the piece, is he gets in trouble for, like, you know, not making the weight a second time in the UFC, kind of has a fight fallout. I think it was UFC 119 in Chicago. They let him go. And like within a week, he's fighting in dirty boxing. He wins that. He wins another one in dirty boxing. And both times the guys are just coming out. Did you watch those fights by chance? Because it's like these guys just coming out, like, you know, swinging these wild overhands and just trying to catch him. He wins those fights, and I'm like, you know, he picks up some money, but then he gets a PFL gig, and he's headlining in his very first one at 185 pounds. I mean, there are certain guys, I was kind of pointing out Matt Riddle was one of those, right? Like, who would keep getting in trouble for something, but then ends up, you know, in a better adventure outside of the UFC. I guess now we're in the wait and see mode, though, if it's got a happy ending. This is a tough draw, right? Like, he's going against Johnny Eblen, who probably should be undefeated right now, and isn't, and is coming back probably. You know how these competitors are, guys who've competed their whole lives. A loss doesn't sit well with them. So this is a very tough fight for him. But have you guys ever spoken to Brian Battle?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, I mean, I mean, he's got one kind of note, right? That's just kind of like, I'm not worried about it, you know? So it's like, you're sort of like, well, if you're not worried about it, I guess I won't be worried about it. But that was kind of how he took it. He expects him to wrestle him, obviously, but he just thinks he can, I think, out-dog him in the end and get the win. It was always fun to talk to him, dude, because when we were I'm not trying to put him down, but like he's kind of the literal opposite of the person we were just kind of, like the type of fighter we were just talking about. This is a guy who sees it from a very simple place, and he wants to go in there and just do what he does best, you know?
Well, yeah, and you could see that too when he was, you know, it seemed at times where we were like, man, is this guy unwittingly like sabotaging his career here? Like, is this huge mistake for him? And he even had the kind of, I'm not that worried about it approach even then. And just sort of like, that's not ideal, but it'll be all right. It'll work out. And, you know, I think a lot of us who have seen this business from a few different angles were like, I don't know, man. I don't know if it will. And it seems like it kind of does for him. At least it shows you there's a lot of resiliency to being, number one, a person whose name we remember. And that helps if your name is Brian Battle.
That's a good point.
In professional fighting. Point. Like, yeah. That's a pretty easy one for us to remember. But also to cement yourself in our minds as a person we want to see. And if you can do those things, then you're going to get a little more rope. And I do think this is a tough, tough matchup for him, though. I went and looked at the betting odds because I was curious how, and it was even, the odds were even more lopsided than I thought. I think I think he's like a 3-1 or 3.5 to one underdog. Wow.
That makes sense. I think that's about right.
Yeah. You know? I mean, if he could pull this off, that'd be a really big one for him.
You know,
but it's tough.
Part of his thing too, man, is he's a little bit like honest to a fault. Like he'll just tell you stuff and you're like, whoa, man, because you're not used to people saying it. Like basically when he got the call that he was cut, you know, he was out, he leaves it to you kind of fill in the blanks, but he's like, you know, he's out partying with his buddy and in a bathroom, sitting on a toilet when he gets the call that he's for dirty boxing. And he's like telling you basically, I was doing stuff that you do when you don't have a fight coming up, you know? And you're like, you're starting to connect the dots and you're like, wow, okay. But that's him, man. Like, that's him in a nutshell. But I will say this. I still think that his promo he cut in Paris after he beat Kevin Jussieu was one of the best we've seen from a guy that you didn't expect it from. Dude, that was straight pro wrestling. You know what I mean? Like, and I mean, to the best, like, the crowd is booing him so loudly that he's like, he has to wait for them and then he just chimes in with, I love it. I love it. You know, it's just, that was one of the best promos ever. So, those types of things kind of form a strange it factor around him. So that makes it fun for me.
It's like, the more I kind of think of it, and I really like Eblen, and I, of course there was those conversations before Van Steenis fight, like before the Impa fight, if I'm being completely honest, where people were like, this guy could be top five in the UFC. You had people like Dustin Poirier, his training partner, saying this, who travels to all of his fights with him. But then you're kind of looking through his record, right? And there is, like, there's some great wins. Like, he's cleaned out Bellator, PFL. Like, Fabian Edwards is a great win. He's beat him twice. Impa, obviously, as I mentioned. Gegard Mousasi is probably the best win in his career, but he's also getting Gegard at a time where, you know, we're kind of talking about Gegard where he's kind of like, I'm finished anyway. Yeah. You know, like whatever happens.
Gegard wanted to be on the farm with his brother, man. He didn't want to be out there fighting at that point.
Exactly, right? So, what comes out of your article, and a great, great interview, Chuck, One detail, like 7-1-1 in the UFC, I believe it is, right, Brian?
Yeah.
Like that is an impressive record. And I'm kind of like, are we sleeping on him here? Like Eblen's just come off this loss and granted he kind of snatched defeat from the jaws of victory in that fight. But I kind of feel like we might be underestimating.
Are you looking at his record right now? Because the guy who beat him though, beat him in the way that a wrestler can beat him. It was like 30.
Is it?
Yeah. And it was like 30-25 type scores. And I think that it's that type of thing that will give you a little bit of pause if a guy's just an assistant wrestler, if he's going to just kind of, you know, stay on him and make that kind of fight. Is he able to get through it? But then again, you know, Brian Battle is like, you know, I faced so many wrestlers throughout his time in the UFC and like with Tough and all that stuff. Like, I think he believes that he's ready for it. But it's just that one blemish. And I remember that fight. Like, I remember it taking a place and he just couldn't do much in that fight. And that sticks in your head a little bit if Eblen comes in with that mindset.
Yeah. Has your opinion on Eblen changed, Ben, since the loss to Van Steenis? Like, you know, given what way we were talking about him, very much like the way we were talking about Patchy Mix, I should say, before he came to the UFC, and we know how that went.
Where's your one?
Has it changed how you feel about Eblen?
Not really. I think that he's one of those fighters where once you've seen him a few times, you're like, okay, I know what this guy's deal is. Yeah. I know what he brings, and he's good at that. He knows what his deal is too. That's a big plus to have in your favor, because it's just like when you know your own identity, what your own game is, and you go out there knowing like, hey, this is what we're doing. We're not going out there trying to figure it out on the fly. We're going out there. He knows what I'm going to try to do. I know what I'm going to try to do, but I'm able to just consistently do it to people. And, you know, yeah, it didn't work out all the way, you know, the way that it was going to. I still think style-wise, this is a favorable matchup for him. And it's a good opportunity to go in there and put that style on a guy who has a name, will bring some awareness to the fight, but also is not that well equipped to deal with what you do. It's still, though, like Ryan Battle's still a tough guy. You could mess around and lose that one. And if you do, if you lose this one, then it's a little bit of a, you know, red alert moment, because that's people are going to start looking at you very differently after that.
I mean, it would then be Ryan Battle with his Jorge Masvidal moment, right? Because everybody knew what Askren was going to do. You could almost imagine that they get Battle wins, it's going to be something like that, right?
That's a good point, yeah.
Like, he could do something that's just like, oh, shit, he hurt him, and then suddenly we've got a different fight. But generally speaking, you know, I think that what Ben just laid out is exactly right. It's like, Eblen is not going to try to fool you or trick you. He's going to go in there and be telegraphed exactly what he's going to do, and he's going to ask you to stop it. And that's really where the fight's like, can Brian Battle stop that?
As I mentioned before, this guy's Dalton Rust is the hometown guy here in Pittsburgh. And look, Dalton and me got off on the wrong foot because of that Fabian Edwards fight. I can remember we showed the clip and I was like, this is the bad guy in every American teen movie. This is what he looks like. He is the jock that, hey nerd. And he pants his guys and he pushes them into lockers or whatever.
These like, killers don't run, PT.
Yeah, right? Like, that's what I see when I see him. Yeah. And then look, maybe I'm the dickhead. Like, maybe I'm the issue here. I was watching him on the Ariel Helwani show. And, like, he's clearly in a relationship with Dakota Ditchev. Everybody knows this. It's all over social media. They are posting pictures together, like, holding hands and stuff. And Ariel's, like, asking him about this, and he's like, what do you want to know, bro?
And I'm like, do you want to know? All the dirty details. Come on.
You've told the world. Like, he's just asking you about this relationship. Like, where did you meet her or whatever? Like, what?
He's...
I don't know, man. He just is rubbing me up the wrong way or something. I don't know. I'm sorry,
Ben. Mate. You like a guy like that. He looks good getting off the bus, right? Like a guy like
that's
that.
That's what Ben was like in school, I'd say. This is exactly who Ben was in high school, as far as I'm concerned.
Walking around kissing his...
I mean, yeah, maybe that's something for him to lean into, is to go out there, you know, just seize the mic, say, cut the music. I want to give all you sweat hogs out here in Pittsburgh a chance to see what a real man looks like. Yeah. You know, you could lean into that Rick Rude kind of style here. And
like, Ben knows how to make fighters, man. The Raven thing and now this.
He does.
Careers have been launched on less.
I mean, Robert Whittaker was just Robert Whittaker until the Bobby Knuckles thing came out, you know? And then it became something different.
Never forget that Daryl Schoonover became briefly a known guy in MMA because he got mad when Rampage Jackson called him titties.
Titties.
Titties. How could I forget titties? I was like, that's who is Schoonover? Who is this guy? And
you don't remember
like,
that?
Titties. I'm like, exactly.
That's funny, though. You say titties, everybody remembers that guy immediately.
Oh, titties, sure.
Yeah. Oh, titties. Yeah, he's all right. He's there for a minute.
Poor titties, Jesus Christ. Yeah, so that kind of, like, right, so this is the thing. The PFL, John Martin was on with Ariel this week, and I really think he's a great frontman for the company. I think he's far better than Don Davis, if I'm being completely honest.
I think very stable feeling compared to Don, I think. Yeah,
he's realistic, you know, like he doesn't feel
does
like
he like blows. MMA? Because if so, then he has something over Don Davis.
He does. He's
careful, Don's gonna
well.
Jump in your DMs, man. He's gotten mine a couple times.
Yeah, no, he's gotten mine sometimes too, but it's also, it's just like, that doesn't help. It doesn't help when it doesn't seem like you really like the sport. Yeah. And trust me, that's as a guy who worked for the IFL, and our CEO came out and was just basically like gave an interview at one point where he was just like, I think he compared the ground game to gay porn.
Wasn't Hickson Gracie one of the coaches there?
Henzo yeah, was. Yeah, but it was just like, you're not helping us, man. This is not what we
Oh, my
need.
Lord.
That was majestic.
You know, Host doesn't like Ben Falks. You know what? Now that we're on this topic, that I noticed Campbell McLaren.
Hates
yeah, Campbell McLaren. Every time you tweet anything, this dude's got a word to say. What's going on there?
You know, they're just.
It's like you rub him the wrong way.
It's outlandish, the shit he says. Like,
you know,
what?
Dalton rubs Pizzi the wrong. You rub this guy the wrong way.
he wants a level of my attention that I am not going to give him.
Well, I was about to say, PFL in a very important year. Some people feel as though, like, if this year doesn't go well, they're shit out of luck. It's over. Like the TV deal, everything that's up in the air at the moment. And I do feel like they've been making changes to make it more sustainable. I've been watching the events as I always do. Belfast is after suffering a big casualty and Paul Hughes being taken off the card, of course. But this is an interesting fight. Certainly Battle and Eblen, I'm very interested in to see.
Do you ever think about like the... So what was it? It was like World Series of Fighting. Now that was the original entity, right? It was like World Series of Fighting. Then I think what, 2016, 17, it becomes PFL. PFL... You know, then goes on to do what they're doing. They buy Bellator. Bellator that had to get rid of its reputation from Bjorn Rebney. It's just, you look at like what these companies have to do to like scrub away the past and try again and again and again. It's crazy. Like you mentioned, Martin, like his task is, it's a tough thing, man. He told Ariel that they're going to do a possible rebrand. And you're like, well, that's really good. I mean, it doesn't hurt, man, because you start to affiliate. Like, part of the PFL thing is just that Don Dave, like we mentioned it, like there's guys, it's almost like in the Bjorn Rebney sense with Bellator, right? You have this other guy who then becomes something of a, I don't know, like the wrong kind of vibe for your company for a long time. And there's other factors too, but it doesn't, if you've got like a shift in thinking and it kind of just etch a sketches the whole thing. It says, let's try it all again from this new method. This is what we're going to do. And give it a fresh coat of paint. I don't mind that at all, man. Especially because I think the PFL started going wrong because they got their kind of high point when they got Bellator and they're signing fighters and, you know, Ngannou and, you know, Jake Paul and everything that was going on, but they did nothing with it. Yeah. And it's been steadily like very negative feeling since then, right? Like an increasingly negative feeling. I feel like this is the right way to go for me.
Okay, here's my question, because I understand what you're saying, Chuck, where you're like, you don't hate the idea of a rebrand at this point, but I guess what I wonder is, how many times can you do it?
Well,
because that was my first thought when he was just like, oh, I'm thinking about maybe a rebrand, maybe refresh the logo, maybe do stuff like that. And I was just like, but you've already done that. So a few times this thing has been a few different things already, and I get what you're saying too, because it does feel like they're sort of entering a new moment now where you're like, the fans have feel like they've readjusted a little bit, being like, okay, so the PFL isn't, we're not doing the season with the points and the tournament thing at the end anymore. Okay. And then the thing that they are doing, especially when they are going to these different locations, like places that the UFC hasn't been to or doesn't go to a whole lot. And they seem to be doing well locally. Like they seem to be filling up some arenas with some of these fights. And that's an encouraging sign. And so you're like, okay, some stuff is happening. Like there's reason to think like maybe there you could turn a new page here. But then I also, there's a part of me that when you got the head of the company up there talking about it, I'm like, are we changing HBO to HBO Max and then back to HBO and then back to HBO Max Plus? Right. Like, are we doing that over and over again? And at what point does it just start to seem like you're just slapping band-aids on this thing and not making like a big meaningful change that anybody actually cares about?
I feel like it's like them like opening all the windows and like, you know, spraying stuff. I'm like, all right, Don Davis, let's clear this out for a minute. Let's clear this out.
And I've done that. Like. Anybody who's ever had, you know, a shitty apartment that they shared with four other dudes, and we've all done that. With mixed results.
It's the easiest way to go.
You got to steam the carpet in here, man. At some point, there's no other choice.
Is that bone water spill? Oh, my God.
Not again. Ben, I can't help but wonder, right? Because of your, like, and Chuck just brought this up moments ago, like, you have a very creative mind when it comes to the build of fighters, you know, with Raven,
Imhoff Office, some people call him. I call him Raven Man. Dalton Rasta becoming the Ravishing Rick Rude of PFL.
Like that. That's a good one.
If they should. Call, if John Martin says, get your number, and he's like, I've heard some of the things you're saying on the crack about the rebrand for Imhoff. I've heard what you said about Dalton Rasta. I think you should do this. But really, like, I want you to be the quarterback of the PFL rebrand. I know I'm asking on the top of your head here. It's not ideal circumstances. You're dealing with a lot over there today. But what would you do with the PFL?
Well, first of all, you're going to have to Venmo me at CME Consulting Services LLC, because we're not just doing this for free. Right? Yeah. We're not just out here fixing everything. I can't keep giving it away.
You've given the samples. We're addicted now. Yeah, now we pay.
I'm driving myself into financial ruin by giving these ideas away. It's tough because I do feel like there's an opportunity right now, right? Like with the UFC moving off ESPN, moving over to Paramount, like you have some space to yourself. You're doing some stuff that seems to be working in terms of, like, you know, getting different parts of the world excited about the PFL product. But the big challenge for any other MMA promoter right now is you don't want to be seen as the UFC, but less so. Like, and that's the same problem that people have been facing for the last 15, 20 years, man. It's like, remember, Chuck, you would talk to WEC guys, mm-hmm. even when the WEC was owned by Zuffa and they were like champions in the WEC. And I remember talking to Mike Brown about this, where he was like, I'm just sick of having this conversation with people on airplanes.
Yeah.
Where they ask what you do. And I have to start out by being like, so you know the UFC? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, okay, it's like that. You know,
in fact, the UFC kind of owns the, anyway.
Yeah, like as soon as you have to start explaining it, you feel like you've already lost something, and you don't want to have to just be like, okay, are you familiar with this thing? Ours is the less popular version of that same thing, and I think that's why you've seen so many other combat sports promoters, the ones who have found some success. It's by being something that gets the UFC audience along with maybe some other audiences, but is doing a whole separate thing, whether it's, you know, BKFC or you know, some other form of like boxing, some other form, like where even the karate combat stuff, where it's like you can find a different lane that's close to this lane. Because otherwise, if you're just traveling in the same lane, you're behind the huge monster behemoth that is the UFC, and you'll always be behind them. There's like the ground at this point is the distance between them is so vast that you're never going to be able to make that up unless the UFC absolutely implodes somehow, which I don't see happening.
Yeah.
So like it's tough to find that room, especially when it's got to be frustrating for the PFL, right, where MVP MMA jumps into the game. They're like, we have one card. We haven't even successfully put it on yet. Here's the plan. It's on Netflix. It's all this stuff. And you're just going.
And we're like, it's going to change the sport forever. It's changing everything.
People are very excited about it. And you're just going, God damn it. We've been here trying to like slowly, you know, like gain some ground here. And these guys just jump in there and people are very excited about it. Like it's got to make you feel a little disheartened.
I'm a little surprised by that answer. I thought you were going to say like, hire you as an advocate. And then you'll get some green mist to spray on people, like spit in people's eyes and stuff. That I thought you were going that direction, but
Chuck, I should have asked you. You know, I knew yeah. I should have
yeah,
asked
yeah.
you.
No, I had the better idea, but I think Ben's makes more sense.
The quicker version, the elevator pitch version is like, you ever been to a tiki bar? That. We'll just do that. It'll be
just
a
go
tiki
there.
Bar,
take
button
notes.
MMA. Yeah. Like tiki torches, you know, a lot of like palm frond type decorations. Yeah. People like that vibe. It just
piranha
feels
type fish
humid
in the tank.
In the arena. Yeah.
Two straws on a drink. I could.
Yeah. You sit down in the corner between rounds, they hand you a fake coconut with two straws and an umbrella in there. That's how you drink your water.
I'm sold. In. I'm totally in.
We get like a Hawaiian Tropic as a main sponsor, you know. We just try some different.
Maybe it's just theme nights all told. Like, you just, that's one theme night. You got a disco theme or whatever. Like,
yeah, and they should, like the Irish pub. My only caveat is that all the themes have to be dumb and you have to refuse to explain them.
You would love
further.
This league. You would love this league. He loves Halloween. Like, you see this guy dress up? Like,
yeah,
he would love
okay,
this league.
And
this
see,
would be
the thing.
His
it's
league.
It's like, how about one, this event? Oh, yeah, we're in Pittsburgh. It's Dracula. We're doing a Dracula event, guys. And people will be like, what does that even mean, Dracula? And you'll just be like,
you'll
Dracula.
Tune in. tune in.
Bram Stoker, baby. Yeah. Thinks there's something
that would
there.
Be
buy the ticket, take the ride.
Yeah.
He only needed 5 minutes to turn that around there. You know, like he just needed to just cook up something there real quick. And then was like, you know, I got it. I'd say, look, you're right about the MVP card. That is taking a lot of interest. But what I'd be more worried about if I was PFL and I have this US event, which famously haven't done well for those. As you mentioned, Ben, they're doing very well in these other local markets internationally. What would worry me more than the MVP situation is I feel like more people are talking about RAF than they are PFL this weekend. Colby Covington, Dylan Danis, and the second meeting between Armin Sarukian. I know you spoke to Giorgio Poulos, Ben, but is that accurate? Do you think that this is compelling more interest than PFL Pittsburgh is at the moment?
Well, again, this is another example of something where it's like you're in a combat sports space, but you're not doing the same thing. You're not chasing the UFC because you're doing a different thing. And when I talked to Giorgio Poulos, I thought, you know, I, on one hand, wanted to ask him, like, what do you do with this guy, Armin Sarukian, especially when you've gotten a rematch with him, but the whole thing we all learned about him and have continued to learn about him is that he will fly off the handle. Even when he knows he is hurting himself and his career prospects, he will freak out, he will lose control, and how do you manage that? How do you go in there? You don't want to go in there scared of like the madman Armin Sarukian, but you need to have a plan for how you're going to deal with that. And like, and so I was asking him a little about that. And he was just basically like, I'm going to be ready for anything. Like if an all out brawl breaks out on the mats this time, I will not be caught by surprise. And yet his whole thing, you know, the reason why he ended up in that match in the first place, it's not because he had such a successful or decorated college wrestling career or anything like that. Like, there are definitely other wrestlers you could have went and got for a match like this if that's what you wanted to do. It's because he brought a lot of attention to himself as the social media guy with the take me down, get $1,000 thing. And in that sense, being in a viral video brawl at this wrestling event with Armin Sarukian is kind of, he's the perfect guy for that. And it's kind of the best thing that could happen to him, is because think about how many times you saw that clip from the end of that match get shared. What did you see of the rest of that match? Like, if you weren't watching, if you didn't go back and seek it out, like, you didn't see clips, like actual wrestling clips from that match being shared. What you saw was the very end where Armin shoves him over, takes a punch at him, and then just chaos breaks out. And so, and it's like, he's the guy where he's just sort of like, yeah, hey, if that's what it takes to get attention, I'm all for that. I asked him too, because I was like, you know, when people type in your name to Google, it doesn't say American wrestler. It says influencer. It's a social media influencer. That's how, kind of how you're identified. Like, does that bother you since you're, you know, you think of yourself as a wrestler and that's what you want to do? And he was just like, no, I mean, that's what it is. And that's why I chose this path, was because I realized, like, you're not going to get a whole lot of attention if you're just like, hey, I'm a wrestler. Right. Just the only people who care about that are other wrestling heads at this point. And so doing this, having a sort of a gimmick that you can go out in the streets and do in a way that works for like TikTok and Instagram, is kind of the only way to get those eyeballs. And then being in a situation like this with Armin Sarukian, where people are going to be tuning in because they're going to go, what is Armin going to do this time?
Right.
Like, will order completely dissolve? Like, if they just go out there and have themselves just a wrestling match, one guy gets some more points than the other guy and wins, people are going to be disappointed with it. We're tuning in hoping to see some more Armin Sarukian craziness.
Man, can you imagine? Can you imagine if he does something crazy? Like, could the UFC, I mean, if they were looking for any kind of like something to be, we just can't trust this guy. I mean, can you imagine if he just can't control himself and does something crazy again?
Well, that's the thing, is that he does not seem in control of it. It doesn't seem like, you know, sometimes when you think like, is this a calculated ploy where he's like, hey, I know what will help get me the headlines coming out of this event, is I'll punch the guy after the match is over or something. He doesn't seem like he's at all in control. Like when he headbutted Dan Hooker, when he punched a fan on his way to the cage at UFC 300. Like,
I forgot about that one. Jesus.
How you forget about that one? Had to make an anti...
Because there's been a lot of fighters
where the way he avoids a lengthier suspension is by being asked to make a PSA. Never see any of these PSAs. I have yet to see a single PSA that anybody like ends up doing, but he doesn't seem like he can stop himself from doing this stuff. And so that's part of what makes it interesting for me. Because it's just like, otherwise, if you were his manager, wouldn't you be telling him like,
I got
a nice quiet weekend.
I got a bold prediction for this, RAF.
All right.
If Dylan Danis makes it, if he's there.
I think he is there.
Armon is going to have a conflict with Dylan Danis, who's the greatest provoker, right? Like, he's going to be out. He's going to, this time it's going to be backstage. That's what's going to happen, man.
Oh, what do you guys think? It's a great show.
That's what Dylan does. Dylan makes headlines in the same way, but he's always got to be the guy that somebody's attacking. Like, he doesn't have to do much here. All he has to do is kind of say something, right, to Armon, and it's lit.
Dylan, he doesn't even have to do that. He just needs to show up to the breakfast buffet in the host hotel. And it's probably, at this point, there's so many people who seem like they want to jump Dylan Danis. I don't know how he can leave the hotel room.
Yeah. I will say that the RAF, that was the best thing that happened so far. I mean, obviously it was getting a very good reputation, like a lot of wrestlers, a lot of people involved. And because it was such a sideline passion for a lot of the guys in the UFC kind of going over, I know Marab is on the next one. That's all good. And I feel like people pay attention because of that association. But to get a viral kind of moment where Armon, who maybe like doesn't translate all the time in the UFC amidst, like UFC fighters, gets this crazy moment in RAF. I feel like it worked for everybody in that sense.
It's like, I would have never thought I'd be into this. I never felt like when this was announced, Real American Freestyle or whatever it's called, and Ariel was talking about it on the show, and it's like, look, they're trying to make a professional element for wrestling, and it's very exciting for people in wrestling. I was just like, yeah, I'm just never going to care. I'm never going to give a shit. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I will never seek this out. And suddenly I'm like, nah, I kind of need to watch this. And I'm surprised by that. I never thought I'd get there. And maybe it is for the freak show element that Ben was highlighting earlier. But do you feel the same, Chuck? Like, I mean, do you feel like it's kind of must-see this weekend? Like, you've got to turn it on?
For the very first one, I forget exactly where it was now. But for the first one, I talked to Chad, the guy who runs it, and a couple of the others, and I did this piece. And I was thinking in the back of my head exactly what you're thinking. Like, dude, you've got an uphill battle because people try this stuff. I mean, obviously, if you really cared, we wouldn't be talking about March Madness. You'd be talking about the wrestling tournament, right? Like, you'd be like the wrestling tournament that goes on at the exact same time as March Madness at the collegiate level. But people don't really tend to tune in. But this one's a little different. They're running it, differently. I think that they've understood the fickle nature of, what's happened. Like the Holly Holm thing where she jumped on a plane all in like 48 hours and did this, competed in like the second one or whatever it was wild. I mean, and so like each one of them has kind of almost like a wild element to it. And this one I feel like will be a slam dunk that something strange happens, that part of it's really cool. And honestly, like it does tune you in. Like, Ben, have you watched them? Have you tuned into any of these? Cause I mean, it does tune you into the wrestling. Like, all of a sudden you are watching wrestling matches and you're like, hey, this isn't so bad. It actually gets you to your seat and watching it.
Well, and I think that one of the things that they can really lean into is you can get people to do matches at this thing, even if they aren't wrestlers, even if they don't come from a wrestling background, traditionally. Like, you can get MMA fighters who they all got to do some wrestling to get anywhere in MMA. And as long as you make the kind of right matchups, they don't have to be the best wrestlers in the world. It just has to be interesting. And you can convince them to come and do these things because you're not getting hit in the head. The stakes are much lower. The risks are much, much less. It's kind of why, what was it? The situation with Yoel Romero and the weight miss and everything where people were like, we're not that forgiving of a decision not to go ahead with the match because we were like, bro, it's a wrestling match.
Right.
Well, you go out there, if he's too big and he beats you on points or something, like you can say you were a sport for taking it, even though he missed weight so badly. It's you have that sort of appeal where you can get some interesting names, and as long as you're willing and able to get creative with how you put together those matchups and give people something, some sort of appeal, because otherwise, if you're just straight up selling us like the technical perfection of wrestling, it's only going to be of appeal to the people who already know that and already know enough to appreciate any sort of art form. This is one thing that I've learned from my exposure to modern dance in the last few years. where you have to know a lot about the technical aspects of it in order to appreciate what you're seeing is going to have a limited appeal.
Yeah.
The stuff that has the mass appeal is stuff where even us idiots can look at it and appreciate it and be entertained by what we're seeing there. And I think like that's what you can kind of lean into there, because you can get a whole lot of people where it's just like, yeah, they didn't wrestle in college, yeah, but like give them a singlet. They've learned some wrestling like in an MMA gym since then. Put them in there against somebody else who's like interesting in a different way, and let's see what happens.
I love it when Ben gets to swirl in his cognac and he's like, hey, boys, the arts. Hey.
He's not fucking about, I tell you that, Ben, folks.
Wait, wait, one quick thing on this.
Yeah?
Dylan Danis versus Colby Covington. Like, who's the bigger heel in this situation? Like, that's a weird one, isn't it?
I mean, Dylan Danis at this, won't he just get some respect back, some points just for showing up and competing in the thing that he said he would
yes,
do?
Probably.
Because that's the big question whenever that you is see the his other name question. On one of these things where yeah. you're just like, is he really going to show up, though? Like, that you can announce all the Dylan Danis fights you want. It doesn't mean anything until somebody, like, he's actually there and somebody says, okay, go.
Ben, you're a good pitch man. What about this for his nickname? Hypothetically, Dylan Danis. What do you think about that?
Dylan Danis will theoretically.
Theoretically, Dylan Danis. That's his nickname.
Sounds like, also, like a title of a Bob Dylan song.
I hate to even say this, but at this point, I almost feel bad for Colby Covington, and I kind of like,
wow,
I can't quite say that I want something good to happen for
bless
him.
Bless his heart. Bless his heart,
but
you know?
It does, yeah. Bless his heart is kind of the feeling, because especially after you saw where you're like, bro, you did all that for years.
Yeah.
And they left you off that White House card.
Jeez.
That's got to sting, man.
He's not getting into politics now, Ben. It's over. The dream is over. Oh, he is not going to run for Senate or whatever the hell it was he was going to do. Let's say you're upset about that.
Well, I mean, that's a win for the country, I guess. But still, it's, you're just like, you were out there and like, you know, at some point you had a conversation with a tailor and you were like, here's what I'm thinking for this suit, you know? And you had to, even if you didn't know at the time, well, one day there'll be a White House card for the UFC.
Oh my God.
And I'll get to be like, you, if somebody had come up there and been like, hey, there will be a White House card, you would be like, well, obviously this is the kind of stuff that gets me on that card. Mm-hmm. And to have them, like, basically it seems not even really consider you for that card is wild. That's got to break your heart.
Oh man,
what do you think of this?
It'd be like if the uncrowned, if you guys had like a that day where it was just like, all right, today instead of posting like fight sports, combat sports news, all our writers, we've asked them all to submit a piece of poetry, and you didn't ask me. I'm right here.
Oh my God!
I thought you were going to say that we were all asked to write like about, you know, the Irish hockey team the soccer team, and then and PT got left out. I mean, but that's the same. It's the same concept.
I'd be happy to pass on that today. Oh, I was
how was that right? Irish hockey team, by the way?
We're trying to get them up and running. Ben sent me a few videos. I had to move on the ice. I'm going to be the big player on the team, so that doesn't bode well for
just,
the future.
Just pick your biggest guy and stick him in goal. That's my advice to you.
I know some. No, Irish people aren't big. We're not going to be good at this. We're not going to be good at this point.
I mean, big can mean fat. And for the
we
purposes
do have fat
of hockey, there you go.
Hey,
some of the best beer league goalies I've ever seen are just big fat dudes who are just going to put on all the stuff that they can, as much padding as they make, they will put it on there, and you look at him and you're like, he does take up a lot of the goal, you know.
You know, I've been watching Ovechkin since you brought that up, that he just doesn't expend any energy, and you're absolutely right, man.
my man scored a hat trick last night. I don't know if you saw him score a hat trick, and it looked like he skated 12 strides the entire game. It's amazing.
It's
I love
hat trick in history.
Lads, I just want to hit on the boxing this weekend. And I'm actually curious because Moses Atama is considered the next big thing in heavyweight boxing. People are very excited about him over here in the UK, certainly. He is 13-0. He has not been out of the second round. He's fighting Jermaine Franklin, who has been beaten twice, once by Anthony Joshua and the other time by Dillian White. Dillian White, a man who Atama just went through in one round in his last fight in Saudi Arabia, I believe it was. I'm wondering, right? Because there's this kind of feeling like this guy is great and a lot of people want to watch him fight and he's just going in lighting these guys up. I, once again, do not feel we're going to find out anything that we don't know from this Jermaine Franklin fight. We expected it from the Dillian White fight. I'm expecting the same shit to happen here with Franklin. Has that buzz transcended across the Atlantic? Like, do you guys know who this guy is? Are you excited about him yet, or is he not really on the radar for the US audience, Joe?
I mean, I've watched him, but it's only because, you know, we're it's part of our job to peek in on that. 21 years old, right? Like, he's so young, and people are kind of rushing him into the Usyk fight, like kind of imagining him in that scenario, but not really. I don't know, like, in Montana, if they're talking about this, but man, I haven't heard anybody, to be honest, mention his name. I know that I watched the Dillian White, well, that was the last one, right? Like, where he gets it done against a tough guy. I guess the new expectation is for him to just kind of breeze through everybody like that, or at least guys like he's facing this weekend. But dude, as good as he is, man, and honestly, pretty well spoken too. Like, for all of that, not really. I have not really heard a buzz about him out here.
Anything over there in Montana, Ben?
No. Montana is, we're way more interested in the upcoming spring game for the University of Montana Grizzly football team. But, you know,
they're still talking about Stanley Ketchel out there, man.
Hang on. Well, what is the season? How does that season work? Hang on. What? When are the Grizz playing? What?
No, they don't. They don't. The season doesn't start until fall, Pete. But okay. The spring game, that's when you get, a look. You get a look at what we got, the crop that we're bringing to the field this year. Anytime you go out there, if you got a big guy who throws hard and knocks people out, you can work with that. Yeah. You got something, you got potential, especially because that's like this thing I was talking about before, the things, art forms where you need a technical knowledge in order to appreciate it. Big dude hit hard, other guy fall down is something everybody can appreciate and understand. And it's something that's shareable in small video clips. Mm-hmm. And so if you can keep doing that, then you can go somewhere with it. But right now, it doesn't seem like, you know, he's a household name or anything over here.
Elsewhere in the pugilism stakes, it will be Fondora v. Keith Thurman in Las Vegas. So good boxing cards as well this weekend. Before we get to the super chats, I would want to ask Ben about his article about Alberto Crane that came out a few days ago, his MS diagnosis. Really, really interesting stuff, Ben. What would you say you learned from speaking to Alberto Crane?
You know, I always enjoy talking with somebody who has approached something difficult and done it with a different mindset and perspective than what I feel is the one that comes naturally to me. Which, you know, yeah. if especially hearing from somebody where he was just, you know, he found out that he had MS essentially because of pre-fight medicals, where, you know, he was in his mid-30s, he was getting ready for a fight. And, you know, depending on where you are, I think this was in California, the pre-fight medicals sometimes are more common, or like they get more extensive the older you get before they will license you. And they saw some stuff in his medicals and they were like, you need to come in and do further tests. And then that's when they gave him the diagnosis of MS. And he said, you know, he had felt a little bit of like numbness and some dizziness when he had been cutting weight for like the last couple of fights before that. But he thought, hey, you know, it's weight cutting. You're doing something bad to your body. Your body's responding. And maybe it's also responding to all the other times that you've cut weight. And didn't really think much of it. And then when he got this diagnosis, it also seemed like it helped that he didn't necessarily appreciate how serious a diagnosis like that could be at first, where he didn't know a ton about it. And he was very surprised. He said when he went into the hospital, the doctor and the nurses were all very dour and grim about it, where they were just sort of like, hey, man, I'm really, really sorry to have to give you this news. And he said that they were treating me like my life was over. And he was just sort of confused by that. And for him, you know, especially in that moment, getting the news in that way and in that context, his first thought was, so wait, are you guys saying this fight is off? That I'm not going to be? And right. They're like, yeah, at the very least, we're saying that you're not going to be licensed to fight. And they were kind of just laying out this stuff. And his next question was sort of like, because he's a jiu-jitsu gym owner and likes to compete in jiu-jitsu and has been doing it, you know, since he was a teenager, got a relatively late start as an MMA fighter after coming from jiu-jitsu, and was sort of like, what about that? Can I still do jiu-jitsu? Can I still do jiu-jitsu tournaments? And they were like, yeah, I mean, you know, there's no like brain trauma involved. So like, as long as your body feels good, you can keep doing that. And so he sort of walked out of there with that as his takeaway at first, just being like, well, okay, I was about ready to be done fighting anyway. as long as I can still do jujitsu, I still have something. And it was interesting talking to his wife about it, because she was like, you know, there were times at first where I worried that people thought maybe I wasn't taking it seriously enough. But really, it was just like, I know the kind of guy he is. I know that he's going to hear even this bad news and be like, well, all right, it's not as bad as everybody says it is. It's not as bad as you think. I'll figure it out. I'll figure out a way to deal with it and to work around it. And to a kind of amazing extent, he has. You know, has never taken any of the medication for any of the medication that people would prescribe for MS, and has said instead followed this route that a physician who herself was diagnosed with MS and tried the medication and was sort of debilitated by the side effects of it, just gone with like a diet and lifestyle-based approach to managing it. And he, you know, that was 10 years ago and seems to be doing relatively well with it. So,
incredible.
You know, you just like, it's the thing that I came away with really was just the courage and the attitude to approach. Because he will tell you, he's like, you know, I'm scared sometimes. Like I look in the mirror, I feel scared about what the future might hold with this. But I also know like, this is the reality. This is what I'm dealing with. And I'm not gonna be scared before it's time to be scared. I'm not going to let that fear run my life. It's kind of inspiring to hear from somebody who has dealt with something like that and dealt with it this well.
Yeah, again, it goes back to that mindset thing that we were talking about earlier about like guys who are too reasonable can't stay in the fight game too long. Like that's exactly the kind of thing we're talking about. Like fighters themselves are fighters in weird ways. Like you realize this in all kinds of guys who have brain, you know, things that show up on their brain scans and stuff, and the way they handle it compared to like the normal person who's like freaked out by just even hearing about it. You know what I mean? It's always a strange thing. He got his last win in the South of France, right? Like he was, you'd mentioned that in the piece. And in some ways you're like, again, it's like, hey man, that's not the worst way to go out. We talk about sometimes guys who don't get that moment, and at least he got that. Like it was a victory for him.
Yeah. I also think, you know, Greg Jackson said something to me once about how fighters have to be optimists, that the kind of sport this is and the all the bad things that can happen to you, you can't go in there pessimistic. You can't go in there just thinking about all the different ways to slip on a banana peel and lose a fight or all the bad things that are possible, because there are so many of them and so many of them are out of your control. You have to be the kind of person who is inclined to think like everything is going to work out. This is going to be great. And he's definitely seemed like he had that attitude and it helped him. He also said, though, that it had helped him to be sort of a better person just in general, or to enjoy the day-to-day aspects of his life anymore, because he can stop thinking about, well, I gotta win this next fight, or I gotta try to get back to the UFC, or I gotta get this title. Instead, he could find a little bit more peace and happiness with, you had a good day today and you felt good.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a fantastic article. Make sure you get over to Uncrown and check it out. And I've had a fantastic day. I thought things were going to go badly today, guys. I was worried, all right, given my situation that unrolled last night for me and the alcohol and the sports. That tends to happen sometimes, you know. We all make mistakes, even though I deliberately did that to myself.
Yeah. Some of us make the same mistakes over and over.
I was going to say recurring mistakes. Hey, let's.
I might make the same mistake tomorrow. You know, it's one of those kind of weekends, you know. But thank you for getting me through this, lads. I really, really appreciate it. I love you both very, very much. I know I've designated freestyle chat to this portion of the show, but I think we already did that. I think we already had various freestyle moments within the show.
Splice in our freestyle moments.
Yeah,
you know?
Just like throw like ad libs. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just bam, bam. How about this one? Boom. Here, over there. Have some of this. Andy, do we have any super chats?
There it is.
Here we go.
Lovely. A little face melter. Your thoughts, especially yours, Petey, on Callum Walsh. How did Frank and Eddie miss out on him? Or did he move to the States before? He moved to the States before. He was apparently, during the pandemic, he was like cooped up. He was trying to launch his boxing career. We had very restrictive situations in Ireland. You know, don't go out. I think it was a 2K radius of your house. I think as soon as they opened flights, he just got on a plane and went to the wildcard gym in Los Angeles, showed up to Freddie Roach and was like, please, let me fucking train here. I will do anything. Please let me train here. Freddie Rhodes was like, all right, come in, kid. And from there, he was introduced to Dana White, and that's how that all happened. I guess it's because he was more of a US product than he ever was an Irish or UK product. He went straight out to the US, and it was pretty much Freddie guiding him to the situation he's in right now, which is a very good situation, no matter how you feel about Zuffa boxing or Dana or anything like that. Like, he is one of the big names, I guess, on Zuffa Boxing, even though he didn't quite give Chuck Mendenhall the show he wanted on that Zuffa one event.
He did not. I saw him twice, though. I saw him at MSG at St. Patty's. That time he delivered. Second one, not so good.
See? Come on.
Yeah.
Great lad. Anything interesting? Thoughts on, a lot of thoughts here today. Thoughts on drug testing in UFC currently. It's clear to see some athletes are on performance-enhancing drugs. That is run it back 91's words, not mine. Last week, an obvious fighter on them.
Name 15 fighters that are on PDs. 26. Can you do that off the top of your head? Come on.
Anyone you see Yoel Romero about a weighing in?
Yeah, okay. And everybody's going to say that about Yoel Romero, but the thing he has going for him is that he has always looked like that.
Yeah.
He's never not looked like
that. He's 72, Ben. Okay?
Which is even more impressive when you think about it.
The ones you wonder about are where it's like a guy suddenly shows up, never had abs before in his life, and he's just ripped. And, you know, you do hear about a lot fewer drug failures now that the UFC has taken it over. And I know people were getting frustrated with...
Do you hear of any?
Yeah. You certainly don't hear about high-profile guys.
Yeah.
You know? Obviously, like, there is still, like, testing being done, but it also seems like maybe... The USADA era was the UFC being like, okay, we thought it was a headache for us to have so much responsibility over this. We got in this outside agency. That turned out to be a completely different and arguably worse kind of headache. And now we're going to go back in the other direction. And it also seems like culturally we've moved in a direction where people care less about it. People are just not as concerned where they're like, tell us you're doing some tests. Don't throw it in our face by having a Vitor Belfort type dude show up here looking like an action figure in his late 30s out of nowhere. And if you can allow us to have that sort of like plausible deniability, we seem more or less comfortable with that.
It's crazy that that happened, isn't it? Like that whole Belfort thing, like the TRT dropping guys into Brazil for that full year, like three guys.
He ruined it for everybody, man. Everybody was having a good time on the TRT stuff, coming in with their doctor's notes and everything. And then Vitor shows up with his traps coming out of his ears, and it's like, all right, everybody out of the pool.
He was so doing true. Crazy shit. He was just throwing wheel kicks, like continuous wheel kicks and fights. You're like, what the fuck is this? You know what I mean? We've never seen a human omit this kind of energy before. It was like he was electrified. It was, it was fantastic. You know, if you remove
you like
the
that.
Moral situation from it, it was fucking insane what juiced up Vitor was doing. I don't think anyone's taking drugs. I think this is a very serious sport. I would not for a second suggest anyone.
Innocence.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and where was McGregor when they tried to test him? He just didn't know. They don't have a good communication system. He would have been there. Okay. So I didn't say it that. Run it back 91 said this. Okay.
But John Jones will hit under the ring that time.
Yeah. Anyway, Pico Brands wouldn't exist in this era. John Jones would not have a blemish on his name. Well, okay. A sporting blemish
different
on his
blemishes.
Name.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Just
he would have
on.
Fewer.
Have
he would have
Andy?
Fewer yeah. blemishes. Just,
all right. Let's go Bosnia. Beautiful victory last night. Pizzi, commiserations to Ireland and Northern Ireland. Yeah, we both got fucked. P.S. Push Ariel to get Longneck in studio. I do not know who Longneck is.
Think it's a beer of some kind.
I'm going to just write that down, though. You have my word that I'm going to text Ariel after this and say, hey, Ariel. Get Longneck in studio. And when he says,
what? Question mark, question mark. And you'll be like, I'm all out of information on this.
Gave you everything I have here.
Yeah, that's all I got.
I forgot Northern Ireland. Does that bother you at all? Northern Ireland going out too? Is like,
well, no. We're completely honest.
All right. I was just curious, you know.
You know. The
it's all part of England, right? It's not like...
Oh, Andy, quickly moving on. Do we have anything else? Predictions for Bosnia v. Italy, hoping for a Bosnia win. Well, here's the thing. I have Bosnian friends, but I have one of my closest friends since I'm a child is an Italian man by the name of Daniel Sansovini. And historically, if Ireland don't qualify for the World Cup, I support Italy because of my beautiful friendship with that man and the Sansovini family in general. So I'm afraid I'm going to have to say, despite you obviously being from Bosnia, I am definitely cheering for Italy. I'm very sorry about that.
That's kind of like how we choose for the Grizz. You know, we cheer for the Grizz for that reason. Yeah. Right? We're like, we do it vicariously, you know?
Yeah. I couldn't get the game. I actually tried to get the game once. I was like, how the fuck can I watch it here? The Grizz, not a big property
You can't
here,
get them here either. Doesn't exist.
Oh, well. Are they a team? Like, is this like the Pro Park situation I have for like Ben over there? Is the Grizz a team? Anyway, guys, that's been the crack. Thank you to my lovely host, Chuck Mendenhall, Ben Folks, for getting me through this episode. Bit under the weather coming in here, feeling a lot better now. Elaine said she's going to get food. She then texted me and said, actually just went to get my nails done instead. So that is not good news.
Your day just keeps getting better.
Just, the hits keep fucking coming for Pizza Carol. Let's go, Italy. Let's go, Combat Sports Weekend. We'll see you next week. Oh, we will see you on Wednesday next week.
Oh,
yes. That is what the, that's what, but put my ear to the streets. Wednesday next week, the crack. That's right. So see you there. We love you very much. Talk Wednesday. Mwah.